Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gillian Schwedler, who is a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She is currently completing a book titled Protesting Jordan, Law, Space, and Dissent. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gillian Schwedler.
Thank you.
And clearly, Jordan is under great stress. The UN have just announced that more than 100,000 Syrians have fled their country in August, and Jordan says up to 183,000 refugees from Syria have entered the country since the uprising began, and they are currently arriving at the rate of about 1,000 a day. And my understanding is that the area on that border with Syria is fairly barren, so they're arriving into a kind of desert and entering what these sort of impromptu cities of tents.
Yes, that's correct. It is a very barren desert area, and it's the season it is now is also a season of sandstorms and windstorms. So besides it being, you know, very desolate and barren, they're also getting hit. And my understanding from reports is also that there's a number of health problems related to that, respiratory problems, sand in the face, in the eye. So it's a bit of a difficult circumstance.
So how is the Jordanian government coping with this? Because there have been some, I wouldn't call them uprisings, but there have been some shows of defiance. On Saturday night, about 600 people led by the Muslim Brotherhood demonstrated in the capital, Amman, against the government taking off the fuel subsidies and thus allowing the price of gasoline to rise. I believe the government's had to reverse themselves on that. So it seems like King Abdullah already has his hands full without this problem with Syrian refugees.
Yes, that's correct. He definitely has his hands full. Jordan has not been immune from the Arab uprisings, the Arab Spring. It hasn't seen a massive mobilization, a unified mobilization calling for the overthrow of the regime. And in fact, the number of the people that have been protesting over the past year and a half have actually been demanding different kinds of reforms or issues from the regime, and the price hikes is a good example. So on the one hand, you have a small group, and the Muslim Brotherhood is among them, demanding reforms to make the country more democratic. You also have a number of more conservative East Bank groups that are protesting, and they want the regime, they want more regime, not a democratic regime. They want a regime that provides more subsidies, more jobs in the public sector. They want an increasingly bloated public sector. And so as Jordan is trying to lessen its public sector and limit the and gradually lift the subsidies on petrol along with some other items, so you have a group protesting that. They want the government to reintroduce those, which is what happened over the weekend. And you also have other groups protesting for more reform. And so he really does have his hands full, not even considering the refugee situation. The refugee situation, I think, has to be understood in the context of the Iraqi refugee flow, which entered Jordan in 2004. Some over 500,000, most estimate between 250,000 and 750,000, are still in Jordan, and they're not going anywhere. And so with the expectation that there would be significant numbers coming into Jordan, which is what's happening, they're very keen on not letting them into major urban centers or any place where they might settle on a long-term basis. He's very, very concerned to make sure this is a temporary phenomenon, even if it does go on for months. And I think that's the reason behind these construction of camps in very isolated areas near the border, so they're not anywhere near to where the people can get to towns and villages and settle on a more long-term basis.
But this is a country of only 6 million people. So if you have 750,000 refugees from the last war with Iraq that are still there, and then you've got on top of that the influx of refugees from Syria, which, you know, at this point it's obviously not reached 750,000, but it's getting up there.
Yeah, and I think it's actually even worse than that, in the sense that of the 6 million people that are Jordanian citizens, more than half of them are of Palestinian origin. Many came from, you know, the refugee flows of 1948 and 1967. But in any case, more than half of the population is of Palestinian descent, and the regime's primary support base are East Bankers. So you have the East Bank trans-Jordanian population, already a minority of that 6 million. Add more than 500,000 Iraqis to the mix who are going nowhere, and, you know, maybe as much as several hundred thousand Syrians, they're very, very keen to ensure that they don't get integrated, because the trans-Jordanian population is, you know, quite nervous, as these demographic numbers are very significant.
Well, again, just back to the Gillian Schwedler, again, professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's currently completing a book titled Protesting Jordan, Law, Space, and Dissent. And we're talking about the tightrope that King Abdullah of Jordan is on, in as much as the IMF, on the one hand, are putting the squeeze on for him to cut government subsidies. And the minute he cut the 10% by 10% the price of gasoline, he was met with tremendous street demonstrations. He's had to reverse that, acting rather quickly, but he fired the sitting government, and he's been pledging political reform, and he's replaced another two prime ministers. I mean, you can't keep shuffling these guys around, can you? At some point or other, you're going to run out of heads to roll.
Yeah, it's a significant problem, and it's very much politics as usual in Jordan, that whenever there's a problem, he blames the prime minister, changes a new cabinet, issues new orders to them, but doesn't really allow them, you know, the freedom to implement new policies, to really, you know, provide a different, you know, vision and enact that. He's very, very tightly controls it. The royal court is really behind the scenes pulling the strings, and so he's, you know, while you constantly have this endless supply of prime ministers to rotate in and out, the government never really lets, I mean, the king never really lets them do anything, to enact much. And so they're very, you know, constrained in their ability to accomplish anything. And as I said, there's very different constituencies that the regime is trying to balance, this conservative tribal core support base of Transjordanians, who want, you know, subsidies to continue. They want prices to remain low. They want all their jobs in the public sector that they feel, quite frankly, are owed to them. The game has been, we provide you support, you know, to the regime, and we expect to get jobs and subsidies in return. And so the king is trying to implement these reforms mandated by the IMF, but also, I mean, he really does want that kind of economic vision of a privatized, vibrant sector. And he's being, the response to that is, you know, very strong. And so we have this being squeezed in multiple directions. The Palestinians, of course, are, you know, majority of the population, and they're, you know, politically disenfranchised. And so whenever, you know, any move he makes in any direction, somebody screams about it. And every few months, or, you know, some cases 2-3 times a year, there's a new cabinet, a call for national dialogue, and a new day, and it's really politics as usual. And I think that's not really sustainable. Jordanians are certainly wise to that tactic and aware that it doesn't really bring change.
Well, obviously this situation, you know, has its own problems, let alone the mounting problems from the war next door in Syria. I noticed in the New York Times, Gillian Schwedler, that there was a reporter in the Syrian refugee camps talking to the young kids that have escaped out of Syria. And it was quite disturbing, the extent to which they want to go back and murder the Alawites. And since the Sunni, largely the victims of this civil war, who are fleeing, are mostly Sunni, they're the majority, one assumes that eventually that they will win this civil war, probably at an enormous cost. But that would indicate then that Jordan will be a staging ground for a counterattack. So this war is not going to go away, surely. It's going to intensify.
I think that's true, unfortunately. I do think it's not going to go away. I think we're in for months, if not a year or more, of this. And to the extent you have this very disenfranchised population, a youth group, you know, reportedly two-thirds of the people in the camp are children, who have lost families, lost fathers, brothers, but many of whom are orphans who made their way themselves, you kind of can completely understand their anger and frustration. And what's happened, interestingly, is where it was this minority Alawite group that ruled the country, it's really morphed into a sectarian issue of Sunnis versus Shiis, as opposed to the population versus this tiny cliquish crowd. And that's unfortunate, because it's as we've seen in Iraq, once those sentiments get cemented, they can, of course, be changed, and they can change over time. But, you know, it's going to be something the country's going to have to deal with. And to the extent you have this, you know, significant Sunni population angry in residing in Jordan and wanting to get back, you could definitely see that, as you say, it being a staging ground for, you know, a movement back into Syria.
Well, just in closing, Gillian Schwedler, I mentioned that the Muslim Brotherhood led the demonstration over the weekend against the king's hiking the price of gasoline and taking off the subsidies, which he's had to reverse. The Muslim Brotherhood are nothing like they as powerful as they are in Egypt, and now they essentially are in charge of Egypt, and that's had tremendous repercussions in Israel, although they haven't given up the peace treaty with Israel, even though it's very unpopular with the Egyptian people. I imagine the peace treaty that the Jordanian king has with Israel is probably unpopular too with the average citizen. And what are the chances of the Muslim Brotherhood becoming a powerful force as they are in Egypt?
Well, they are a powerful force, but I think as long as the monarchy remains intact, they'll always be a powerful opposition force. And they've always framed themselves as a loyal opposition. They've never called for the overthrow of the regime. They've never said anything not in support of the monarchy. They just want the monarch's power to be gradually diminished. So as opposed to Egypt, historically over the years, the real radicals in Jordan have been the leftists, the communist and socialist groups, the militias, the Palestinian militias, you know, of course, as well. But the leftist groups were the radicals, and the Muslim Brotherhood had been allied with the regime against them in the 50s and 60s and 70s. In Egypt, the inverse was true. It's the Muslim Brotherhood that was imprisoned, and the ostensibly socialist regime of Gamal Abdel Nasser was allied with other, you know, more leftist-minded groups. And so in Jordan, the Muslim Brotherhood was never the kind of anti-regime group that it was in Egypt or in other places. Having said that, you're absolutely right. The peace treaty with Israel is wildly unpopular, but I think, like in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood, as well as all the other groups that don't find it that popular, realize there's tremendous resources that come with maintaining that treaty from the United States, also from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia really wouldn't want a democratic or a Islamist Muslim Brotherhood-led regime as a neighbor. It really wants the monarch to remain. And so I think I don't think the peace treaty is in any danger, even if something significant were to happen with the regime, which I also don't think is imminent. But there's a lot more pressures in Jordan than many people realize. And as I said earlier, I really think the king feels it, and he's panicking a bit, and he's scrambling, and he's trying to play a number of moving parts right now to sort of ensure primary, first and foremost, that his regime remains in power.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Gillian Schwedler.
My pleasure as always. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Gillian Schwedler, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's currently completing a book titled Protesting Jordan, Law, Space, and Dissent. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.